Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a New Day radio show where the dialogue is authentic, host is passionate, and we help you to become empowered, inspired, resilient, and transformed. Yes, our focus is to change our world by transforming one business and one life at a time. Now, here is your host, author, columnist, reinvention coach, entrepreneur, teacher, and speaker, Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson.
Well, happy Sunday to you, everyone. I tell you, we are having a roasting toasty summer here in Connecticut. Today, I think we hit it at 93 degrees. So, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we were having a lot of rain, and now we are really enjoying the warm weather. So I hope you are staying cool where you are. And thank you so very much for joining us, guest 3367. Thank you for joining us. You are welcome to call in at 646-915-8166. And before we get into the conversation and other announcements, let's just play the theme song.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I want to be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand.
You know, there are times when we have certain episodes of the show and the theme song is so appropriate, and today's episode is one of those times, because my guest, John Gomes, is one of those persons who have been a teacher for many years. He's been hanging out with me in the virtual green room. But just like the song say, you just don't want to be somebody special. You want to be more than a friend. And this teacher wants to be certainly more than just a teacher. You know, he's an advocate for the children. He's so passionate about what is taking place in the life. And he is so passionate that he has took the time to write a book about that. And that's why we are having him on this evening. It's going to be an energetic and stimulating conversation. I encourage teachers to call in. I encourage parents to call in. I encourage students to call in, because I can assure you that a lot of what John is going to be talking about this evening, you as parents, you might have been pondering about these things over the years. Well, you will be relaxed to know that there is somebody in your corner who believes the same thing. So we always encourage you to call in. The number to call is 646-915-8166. you do not need to wait for any special portion of the episode to call in. Whenever I see you on my board, I will acknowledge you and I will take you on live with your questions. If you are in the chat room and you choose not to call and you want to ask your question, please feel free to type it in the little box below and I will read it for my honored guest. So without any further delay, I want to welcome my honored guest, Mr. John Gomes. John, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me on the show today, Daphne.
Ah, it's an honor. It's an honor. You know, we do the show twice a week, and the show on Sunday is so designed to impact people's lives and to turn people's lives around in whatever is going on. And today's conversation is a long time coming. And there are many people who will stay behind the screen and they will have the conversation, but they are afraid for whatever reason to have the conversation in public or even to write about it. So I want to applaud you for taking a stand, not for your advantage and not for your benefit, but for the benefit of the America's children. I applaud you for what you are doing.
Well, thank you.
Would you please tell my listeners a little bit about you and all of that, as much as you want to tell them?
All right.
We like all the little juicy details.
Well, I was coming up on my 20th anniversary of being a teacher this past year, and I decided to do something a little different for maybe that 20th anniversary, and I decided to write down my experiences in a book. I didn't know how long the book was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be a bestseller. I didn't know anything about it, but I said, you know, I'm going to try this and see if maybe what I've seen over the past 20 years might make a little bit of an impact in education. I didn't intend to become a teacher to start out. I studied science in college. Astronomy specifically, and once I got to the end of my 4 years and they start asking you to think about what are you going to do for your master's degree and what are you going to do for research, and when you come upon those questions and you say, I don't really know, that's when you start to think, maybe I should start to explore other avenues. And I found that I enjoyed sharing science with other people more than actually doing it itself. So I took a little bit of a lesson from my older sister, who was a Spanish teacher, who I actually had as a student teacher in high school. If you can imagine that, having your sister as a student teacher.
Wow.
What I know I put her through, but I took her advice and I took her experiences. I said, I'm going to try this. So I started teaching earth science for the beginning of my career. And it's been an interesting trip. I've done a couple of different things. I've found different ways to help kids and to try to inspire kids. And all of that is basically what I put into my book, What Have You Done to Our Schools? And if people would like to take a look at it, it's on Amazon. It's an e-book on Amazon. I'm not a big published maven here, Daphne, but you know, you got to start somewhere, and Amazon is an excellent place for that. They've been very supportive, and it's been a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
But before we delve into the book, 20 years. And you have traveled a journey that I don't think it was always a high journey. As you look on your students and you look on the various systems that you have been part of.
Yes.
So much so that you have put it in writing. But let us talk about some of these experiences over the years.
Okay. Well, I started out, actually, I didn't even start working in public schools, my first job. My first job, I was teaching at a science center in Connecticut, and I was actually teaching university classes in astronomy. So that was an interesting experience to go out from university and then start teaching in the university. But I knew I wanted to get into high school teaching, to do the kind of things I did in my student teaching where, you know, you can work with the kids after school and extracurricular activities, and you can, you know, get more involved with them, because that's the whole thing about teaching. It's not just teaching a subject. It's not just trying to get, you know, your students to understand your curriculum. It's trying to have some kind of effect on their life. And it could be the smallest thing you ever think. I've had students come to me that barely even talked to me when they were my student, and yet they remember things that you do for them or you say to them or encouragement that you give them, and the smallest little thing could have a huge effect. And that's that's one of the things I go into in my book as well from my experience, is that we as teachers, you have to be careful on what you do as a teacher, because the smallest little thing you do, and you could mean absolutely nothing by it, that could have a huge impact, whether negative or positive, with a student's life. And
you know, I want to just interject here. One of my mentors, Dr. Miles Monroe, out of the Bahamas, has a similar story. When he was in elementary school, one of his teachers told him that he would never amount to anything in this world. And he was blessed to be in London, speaking at a very large event. And there was this elderly person on the line with a book to be signed. But this book was, it was an old book. It was the very first book that Dr. Miles had put out. And the person came to get it signed. And as he shared the story, John, he said, "I was wondering why this person did not buy any of the new books, but they wanted for me to sign that old book." And the person waited for the last person to be through and then went up to Dr. Miles. And Dr. Miles took the book and signed the book and handed the book. And the person said to him, "You don't know who I am." And he said, "No, but I just want to thank you for coming and for supporting me. I notice you're owner of my very first book." And the person said, "Well, I am so and so." And they both hug each other and they both burst in tears. And the teacher said, "Oh, how I was wrong about you." And nothing was going to prevent me from coming to this event today. I don't care about how many trains and buses I had to take, but I was making sure. So you are on mark when you say we never know the impact you have on a child's life. And although they may not like you when you are standing at the front of their classroom, as they go out into this big, big world, they are going to remember you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you remind me of a similar situation that, more of a positive idea, though, that a student of mine was very interested in science, and there was a symposium and a conference, and some of the kids wanted to go, so I arranged it with the school to take them, and they were, you know, really enjoyed it. And several years later, I happened to be looking on something, and there he was working at an astronomical survey in one of one of the places in the United States that does research. And that was just
wonderful.
You see things like that, and that's what makes being a teacher the thing that people don't understand what it is to be a teacher sometimes, and what that's you get out of it. And that's what you get out of it. We didn't go into this job to get rich, Daphne, that's for sure.
No. I want to ask this question. in your estimation or evaluation or whatever, what set teachers apart? Because they are teachers and they are teachers.
Mm-hmm.
What set you guys apart?
I think, well, one is the love of whatever you're teaching. If you're teaching something that you don't love, you're not being an effective teacher then. Myself, I love science. I love especially earth science, and I'm a little bit conceited with my students to say my science is the most important science you'll ever learn, because it's what shows you what's going around outside. When you go out every day, the first thing you notice is the weather or something happening in your environment. So the love of what you're doing transposes to your students, one. And two, to also want to teach students the right way to be. That's what I think sets a teacher apart, because when you see somebody doing something wrong for themselves, you jump on it, and you want to help a student to better themselves and to prepare themselves not only for their diploma in high school, but for their life in the future.
For their life, exactly. You know, I kind of knew what the answer was going to be, and I wanted an affirmation on that, so I want to thank you. I had a friend, and I'm saying had because she died a few months ago. She spent many years in one of the school systems here in Connecticut. And I always watched her. She was always going to the parent-teacher store. And she was spending hundreds upon hundreds of dollars. And I said, wow. I said, they gave you. She said, no, they don't give me. She said, I have to make sure I have these things in my classroom so that my students can get what they want. I don't want to shortchange them. And at her funeral service, some of her past students who were now grown came and spoke that who they are today is because of her love for them, her passion for teaching them. She was more than a teacher. She was not only about academics. She was about life and preparing you for the world.
That's one of the things that students, you know, whatever class you specifically teach as a teacher, you'll always have at least a handful of students every year ask you, what am I going to get out of this for my life? What is this going to do for me? And you have to get them to understand you're not here just to learn about a specific subject. You're here to learn about how are you going to conduct yourself for the rest of your life. And what can we do to show you from our experience? Remember the old days when the experience of elders was always held in high regard?
Yes, that is gone.
It's gone out the window.
Shamefully so. You know, honor is gone now. I look on some toddlers and the way they are speaking to grown-ups, and I say, oh, my heavens. Where has honor gone in our society? And you listen to some of the adults speaking to each other and you say, no wonder why their children are acting the way that they are acting. So we need to be more aware of our attitude, our language, because we are the models for these future adults. So but let's go back to your experiences over the 20 years.
Okay.
And, you know, what has been igniting this fire and this passion that you say, something ain't right about our system. It was not like this. What has happened?
Yeah, that I guess what really spurred me on to do this, and I've done little things in the past, I've written little opinion things in like local papers or something, but I think the thing that really got me to sit down and write something, a full-blown, you know, book, is from the experience of teaching in my old junior high school. That's what spurred me to say something's wrong, because we came, and you and I are pretty close in age, so we came from a certain generation,
mm-hmm.
how things were done, how school was conducted, how you behaved. And I had the opportunity, a job opened up at my old junior high school, and that's one of the things as a teacher, you enjoy giving back to the educational system that helped frame you. You know,
right.
That was,
mm-hmm.
and I took it, and I said, you know, this is going to be fun. In fact, I had the same classroom that I had science in. I walked in, and it was the biggest deja vu you've ever seen in your life when you walk in and say, holy smokes, I was here 30 years ago.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was my school. And just to comment on something you said before about buying materials that your
mm-hmm.
friend would go, you know, the good Lord invented dollar stores for teachers, let me tell you. Because without the dollar store that was down the street from my school, I wouldn't have never been able to do some of the science that I did with my kids, because there's just not money. And if I opened up some of those doors in the cabinets in my old
mm-hmm.
room that I went to school in, there was the same equipment in there that was there when I was a student. So if that's not a problem in education right now, I don't know what it is. You need the equipment to do your job. Imagine a baseball player going out and playing baseball with a 30-year-old glove and 30-year-old bats and balls. They're not going to get very far, are they? So that's one thing.
So, John, who is responsible for that? Why aren't the teachers getting the supplies, the equipment, the whatever they need so that they can do the job the right way? Why is this not happening?
I think it's the climate of what's going on in our schools today, and what I saw as a teacher in that school 30 years later, that money is being spent on materials and purposes that 30 years ago they would have never even thought or considered on spending money on that. And to put it in a nutshell, today's students, not all of them, we have excellent students in our schools. We have excellent, excellent students. But so many students today just do not have that basic discipline to do their work and do what they need to do and to follow direction. And so much time and money is wasted on people running around taking care of things that our teachers never did. When we sat in school and your teacher came in the room and started to teach whatever the lesson was that day, if you were talking, you stopped. You started to take your book out. You started taking notes. You were invested in your education.
Mm-hmm.
Today,
mm-hmm.
they're not. And part of it is, I will say, part of it is not their fault. Technology today is really strong. We didn't have computers back in those days, did we, Daphne, when we were going to school? We were using notebooks, pen and paper, and typewriters.
That's right. And you were adding up. You didn't have any calculators.
Yeah, use your fingers and your toes, right?
Oh,
that's what
that's
you were using when you did your math class. But it's amazing how things have changed to the point that the schools are spending money on trying to fix what's wrong with our educational system. But what's wrong with our educational system isn't the system itself. It isn't the teachers in the system. It's what's going on in the students' heads, some of them.
That's right.
And
that's
their actions and their choices.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell my students, you know, you have the ability to make so many choices of what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've read somewhere there's 10,000 decisions we make a day in our
brains. That's right. That's right. How can the parents, how can we as parents put a dent in what's happening? Do you think parents are involved enough? Because I know when I worked at a certain job, and part of my responsibilities was to empower the parents to be involved. And when I got that job, I was so surprised that some parents, they don't go to parent-teachers meeting. They don't stay in touch. However, when the kid comes home and complain about the teacher, then they were ready to curse the teacher out.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having an open communication dialogue with the parents, I said, let me tell you something. When your child knows that the teacher has your job number, the teacher has your cell phone, and the teacher have your home number, their entire attitude is going to change because they know it's open communication between the parents and the teachers.
Right.
Instead of going to chew out the teacher, you take little Johnny or Susie with you and you go for a respectful meeting with the teacher. And don't badmouth the teachers at home when you know your child needs discipline.
Mm-hmm. No, there's,
how do you think parents can, what can we do as parents?
Well, the parents who are doing the job that our parents did back in the day when we went to school, they're fine. They know what's going on, and they're setting up the proper way for students to behave not only in school but at home. And they have no problem. It's the parents that are taking a bit too much of a hands-off attitude to me that are allowing their students and their children to be bad students by just not instilling in them the value in their education, how important it is for them to not only get their education but to also learn about themselves in school and the proper way to behave. And it's just a general adversarial climate right now in education, I feel. Whenever you have a parent come in for a teacher's conference and that parent's student is a wonderful student, oh, you sit there and you just talk with each other and everything is great. When a student's parent comes in and that student is struggling, whether it be behaviorally or academically, there's immediately you can feel the tension in the room
mm-hmm.
as soon as a parent
mm-hmm.
walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
this isn't helping anything. This isn't helping the student, definitely, and it's not helping our situation in education
mm-hmm.
right now to have
mm-hmm.
this. And it's not just between teachers and parents. It's between teachers and administrators
mm-hmm.
and superintendents. And there's
mm-hmm.
all of this going around. And I've been in five different districts I've taught in, and some are better than others, you know, from experience. In
mm-hmm.
jobs you've been in, some climates are great in a job that you work in. Some are just really adversarial and tension-filled. And that's the problem, I think, that's at the root of why
mm-hmm.
education is going downhill. If you look
mm-hmm.
at the numbers and you see how well we used to be compared to other educational systems in the world
mm-hmm.
20,
mm-hmm.
25, 30 years ago, the
mm-hmm.
numbers have just been slanting downward on a regular
mm-hmm.
basis. And mm-hmm. there's a cause for that. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately today, the cause is being pointed at it's the educational system's fault, it's the teacher's fault, when you know as well as I do, your school never failed you as a student when you were in school. You
mm-hmm.
failed yourself. The,
mm-hmm.
the building can't fail you. The teachers
That's
can't
right.
fail you. They can fail your grade, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't cause you to get a F. You
That's
have
it.
Earned your grade, whether it be an A,
That's right.
B, C, a D, or an F.
That's
and
right.
That's what's going on in education today. That adversarial nature that's going on, and part of it, I'll tell you now, we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, in more in depth. Part of it is the business aspect of education
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
Business
mm-hmm.
has gotten to the point in education that they're finding ways to make money. And unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
sometimes they're finding ways to make money at the expense of what's best
of
for kids.
Of our children.
Yeah.
And this is the perfect way to take a break, take a sip of water, and I'll just go into a little housekeeping here.
Okay.
AMD Law Group is an international law practice committed to assisting you in realizing your strategic business goals. Led by Ms. Aurelia Mitchell-Durant, Senior Managing Partner, AMD Law specializes in international business, international intellectual property, and general internet law. We also support organizations in resolving corporate compliance issues. Addressing the legal needs of technology firms and other businesses serving both domestic and international markets, we are uniquely positioned to assist both startups and long-established organizations. Although AMD seeks to proactively avoid litigation wherever possible, We are fully capable and ready to litigate on your behalf. AMD Law Group. Find us online at amdlawgroup.com or contact us at 347-699-4AMD. That's 347-699-4263. Let us help you pursue and protect your dreams.
All right. I also want to remind you that June the 14th through the 22nd, 2014, we invite you to travel with us on the Norwegian Epic, the Empowering People Foundation, which is my nonprofit, to fund the breakfast feeding program at my former elementary school in Jamaica. We are having a fundraiser cruise to Europe. Our port of call is Barcelona, Spain. Then day two, we are going to be at sea. Day three, we are going to be in Pompeii. And day four, we are in Rome. Day five, we are in Italy. Day six, we are in France. And day seven, we are in Palma de Mallorca. And day eight, we are back in Barcelona. So I want to encourage you to call our cruise consultant, Miss Olinda Begg, Olindabegg, at 203-539-0094 or 203-818-3174. Or you can email her at olindabegg@aol.com, olindabegg @aol.com. We are looking for your support, and we encourage you to call the Category B, C, it's 1313. Category B, E, is 1273. Category ID, it's $873 per person. And there are payment plans available. Again, you can get more details by calling 203-539-0094 or 203-818-3174. So we hope to see you on the Norwegian Epic. And before I go to John, we have a caller, so let me hear what the caller has to say. Hello, caller, your last four digits are 2486. Would you please state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Hi, Miss Daphne. This is Rita in California.
Hello, Miss Rita. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any comments or remark about our school system? Do you have any children in the school system? And what's your experience then?
My son is in college now, but I didn't actually hear the conversation, so I'm not really up to speed on what you were speaking on.
Okay. All right, so I'll come back to you, Rita, and as always, thank you. I hope you had a happy 4th.
I did, thank you.
All right, so I'll come back to you later on. All right, John?
Yes.
Are you there? Yes, so we are going to continue. We're talking about the school system now has become a money-making thing, and our kids are falling in the trenches. So what are some of the things that, if you could wave your magic wand, what are some transformations you would like to see take place in America's classroom?
Well, to be honest with you, I think the first thing that would alleviate a lot of problems is elimination of a lot of the standardized tests that we give our students. Back when we were students, the only standardized tests that we needed were the Iowa tests that we took for reading, for math skills, to give our teachers a sense of where we were as students. And they could readily use that information or pass it on to the next teacher in elementary school the next year to help students, you know, meet the deficiencies that they had. Now we have such a slew of standardized tests that not only take up time to actually institute them out of curriculum, they take time out of curriculum to review things that if you're testing a student, they should know these things already. So that's part of the business, I think, that's come into education that is having a negative effect. When I went to my junior high school, we didn't take any standardized tests. We took classes. And, in fact, junior highs themselves have changed over the past 20, 25 years. They don't exist anymore. They're now middle schools. They've decided to move around basically because of amount of students in elementary school and class sizes and school sizes. They did this. In fact, they did this under my nose. When I started teaching in 1992, I had no idea this was going on. And then suddenly, maybe a few years later, someone told me about it, and I said, when did this happen? And they said, well, they've all started to move towards middle school ideas. Well, you bring sixth graders up to a middle school, and you push ninth graders from the junior high school up to high school. In ninth grade, you're already starting to accumulate credits for your high school diploma. Unfortunately, now, eighth graders in middle school, they're not doing that. So now you've already set up them, in my estimation, for a bit of a failure because they're the top dogs in the school now, and they don't have anything to keep them in line as far as you need to accumulate credits. So that's one problem. The other problem is the sixth graders coming up. Now, sixth graders traditionally are elementary school. They have the same teacher all the time. The teacher is taking them, leading them from place to place. Now, suddenly, these sixth graders, who are a year younger than normally in a junior high school environment, they're let go, and it's like the Lord of the Flies. The kids are running in some schools, literally. I've seen with my own eyes. When that bell runs, and if you don't watch out, Daphne, you'll get run over.
Oh, yeah, I visit a lot of the high schools out in the States certain time of the year. They run you over.
Well, I don't know how many times I've been clipped by a sixth grade girl's binder in the hallway and drawn blood on my arm. So it's really a situation that you have some dynamics set up in schools right now that aren't the best idea to get our kids to perform and to be successful. And that's like going back to what we were saying before. That's what got me motivated to write this book because I'm into science. In science, you have to have very good observational skills. You have to understand that science is what you see, what you can test, what you know to be true. So I guess when you're interested in that, from a young age, you start honing those skills because you're noticing, you know, cloud formations or something that's happening or something strange. So I remember what it was like when I was in junior high school. When I walked through the hallways the first day I started teaching there, I could envision on a daily basis what I would do and what class I would go to and how things were conducted. We didn't have people running in the halls. We didn't have people late to class. I could never even remember a student being asked to leave the class when the teacher was instructing. We would sit there, take our notes, and be involved. My door, they probably should have replaced my door of my classroom with a revolving door for the number of kids that I had to ask to leave the room in the 4 years I taught there because of behavioral problems and inability to focus on what they're doing. There's a lot of things going on, and unfortunately, parents, they're really not privy to these things.
What's going on?
They're not in this classroom, so they don't know what's going on. They don't even know what their own student, their own child is doing in some cases. And
you know, I shared when my son was in middle school, I shared at a PTO meeting, and I told a lot of the parents who were there, I said, you know, each and every one of us need to visit schools unannounced to our children, sit in the back of the classroom and observe them, and do the same thing in the cafeteria, because you're going to be surprised and wonder, is that my little Johnny? Is that my princess? Is that my prince? Because you will be surprised sometimes what you see. But I want to piggyback on the running in the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the kids running so much? Is it that they don't have enough time between classes?
I think part of it is the anxiety of a sixth grader coming into this new school and not wanting to be late and actually being responsible, you know, compared to the seventh, eighth graders who've been there a while and, you know, it's not a big deal. And you're also looking at probably a half to a foot height disadvantage for the kids. So there's a lot of issues with that, but they're used to being led around. Now they're on their own, so to speak. So
that's
something that's changed, because 7th, 8th, 9th graders, when we were in school, you didn't see that kind of thing. In fact, when lunch was over, you went from the lunchroom on your own up to your next class, and sometimes the teacher was there, and, you know, you'd sit in the class with them and maybe chat. That was a great opportunity to talk to your teachers before class if you had something to talk to them about. Now kids are led around in lines. Even eighth graders led around in lines. To me, that's not setting up your child for success in high school. You don't get led around in lines in high school. You have to be responsible for your own behavior.
That's right. You have to take responsibility. Yes, yes. You know, what have you done to our schools? And who is the you referring to?
The U's referring to in general, not any one specific person. I'll even put teachers into the equation. It's a collective, I guess it's an attempt on my part to say, what did you do to that school that I remember going to 30 years ago? Why is it so different today? And there's a multitude of factors. In science, you have, when you're figuring out a formula to explain something, there could be tons of different variables in that formula. There are so many, I say in my book right away, I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that I have all the answers. I don't.
I'm
just giving you my experience of what I've seen and what I've observed. And and the eyes don't lie, Daphne. You know,
That's right.
When you see things in your life and you see it with your own two eyes, your eyes don't lie to you. So there's plenty of things going on in schools. And like you said, I would love some of my parents to come in and sit and watch what's going on in the classroom and to see how their students, not only their students are behaving in school, but others, and seeing what's going on and what teachers have to contend with on a daily basis. It's not like what we used to go through as students. It's entirely different.
That's right. Do you think if you had not gone back to your former junior high school in the role of a teacher, do you think we would have been having this conversation today?
Probably not. Probably not. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, people are willing, at the beginning of the show, you said people are willing to say things in the back room and in the lunch room and such. And I think what motivated me was not so much the teachers being attacked or the negative things you hear from people. It's always been to me, if you advocate for the teachers the right way, then you're advocating for the students.
That's how it works.
When we went to school, you had some teachers who weren't great teachers. Everybody has some teachers that aren't great teachers. They're close to retirement, say, and they're starting to get a bit burned out. Or maybe they never meant to be a teacher, and they had to fall into that position. But the majority of your teachers, you knew they cared about you and they cared about your grade and wanted you
to do
well.
That's right.
You can pick that up as a kid. You can't lie to kids. That's the one thing I've always said.
No matter how you try.
No, you could stand up in front of the room and be the best actor. We could get George Clooney to go in front of a classroom and pretend to care about the students. They're going to see right through him.
Right,
they're going to see that he doesn't care.
That's right. That's right. Why do you think teachers are so reluctant to speak up? Is it that they are afraid of their jobs being jeopardized, or because it's not very many teachers are willing to stand up and advocate for the students? Why is this so, John?
I think there's a lot of factors that are involved in that. But when you look at a teacher's career, because we call them careers, we don't call them jobs. We call it's our career.
Right.
You're at different stages in your career. A new teacher that started to teach, the first year as a teacher, it's a madhouse. You are so behind in everything you need to do. You're working not only in school, you're working at home probably almost the same amount of hours that you put in during the day to prepare lessons, to get yourself going. Then the second year it gets a little easier because you've gone through it one time. But after a few years, even maybe 5 or 6 years, that teacher is not going to say anything. They're not going to really say and be blunt or be really truthful with what they see.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a politician when you're a teacher in some respects.
Wow.
You cannot say what's really going on in today's in today's schools, because you will be crucified for that by not only the parents. Yeah.
Are labeled a troublemaker,
right,
and all of that, and a big stigma is there. It's like a red dot in your forehead, and it's a shame, because who is getting the bitter end? Our children.
Mm-hmm.
The children. So I think teachers need to remove themselves out of the equation and think about the future of the children. You know, if you're really called to be a teacher and you want the best for those students, you must think about them and put them first at all times.
Mm-hmm. And the opposite end of that equation from the new teacher is the teacher that's close to retirement. That teacher is not going to do anything to jeopardize their retirement like any person would do. Right. So that person is also not going to be someone to come out and say those things that we all say in the lunchroom, but we don't say out loud. So I thought, well, here's where I can come in here. I'm in the middle. I haven't been teaching as long as some of my colleagues. One of my colleagues I just taught with retired after 40 years teaching.
Wow.
Just retired this year. I'm halfway there. But then again, I'm also... I don't have dependents that my job and my career being jeopardized a bit are going to suffer from that. So I said, you know, I'm in that position in my life that I can say this and do something to try to help this situation. It may not help
at
all, but I'm going to try.
You're putting the effort in, and if not this generation, well, the next. You know, a lot of the legacies that you and I are benefiting from today are the work of that people put in a long time ago. So again, I applaud you for wanting to do something. Let me check back in with my caller to see if she have any questions.
Okay.
Hello, do you have any questions yet or any comments?
No questions, but I would like to make a comment that
yes.
I think if, like you said, the parents got more involved, then it would definitely change our school system.
Did you get involved in your child's education? You said your son is in college right now, right?
Correct. Yes, I did. And, you know, I'm just blessed because the teachers, they all, you know, were very nice. My son actually rents a room where he goes to college from one of the teachers from the school.
Oh.
She has a trailer house, and her two sons live there, and they had my son to go ahead and move in with them also. So,
beautiful.
You know, it's definitely a blessing. I stayed involved, and that's what I encourage, you know, more parents to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw the positive response of that cooperation and that teamwork between parents and teachers to get the end product that you get a child not only getting a good education, but getting a good foundation for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Wish we had more parents like you. We always say, you know, whenever we've had parents in, come in and their students are great and the last one comes in, you know, after their third kid has come through the system, we always ask them, could you go out and have some more kids, please? Because we'd really like to have more kids from parents like you.
That is so, you know, I one of the programs I founded for parents when I worked at that former job was a parent-to-parent buddy system where parents, I had match up English-speaking parents with the non-English-speaking parents to get them involved in their child's education. And not because you did not speak the native language of this country. That program allow you to go to PPTs or parent-teachers conference.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your buddy there with you. So you wouldn't have to feel intimidated that they're going to be talking over your heads and you are not understanding. And I taught them, I said, you know, you get your 3x5 index card and you jot your points down and there. It doesn't matter how long you take to get your points out. Once you begin the conversation, they need to respect you and listen. And you'd be surprised to know the great result that these parents began to have. So again, parents must stay involved. I'm going to give you a minute. Guest 3920, do you have any questions? You can either type it in the chat room or you can call in 646-915-8166. My honored guest today is John Gomes. He's a veteran teacher here in Connecticut, and he wants to be more than a teacher. He is a friend and an advocate of the students here. He is going beyond the call of duty to awaken our observations that something needs to happen. And it needs more people like John, you know, to get up and take an action, whether you have children in the school system or not. You can get involved, mentor a child, and get involved in their life so that you can bring about that which is so needed. We have 37 minutes remaining in this segment, so let me hear from you. So is that it, or I should, can I mute you back, or... You have some other feedback. All righty. Thank you. Okay. So, again, the number to call is 646-915-8166. Remember, there are no silly questions, only the ones that you do not ask. So, be sure to call in and let us hear from you out there. So,
you would have made a good teacher. You know that, Daphne?
I am a teacher. I just don't teach children. I teach adults.
Right, right. But a student teach, you know, for students, because you say a lot of the same things that we say in the classroom, you know, as far as philosophy.
It's interesting that you say so, because you know that I coordinate a program that I visit majority of the high schools throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of the teachers have encouraged me to design a curriculum where I can come into the school and do some work, because they said, let me tell you something, the classes that we see after you come and leave is not the same class when you visit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I am considering. So
and the comment that you made earlier about the program that you work with the parents that don't speak the native language, that mm-hmm. that reminded me of how the difference I've seen from the different, what we call them, ERG groups in Connecticut, as far as the wealthy districts to the districts that are in poverty, and to see the difference mm-hmm. between parental involvement. I've seen teachers in districts that they have an open house and one or two parents show up. That's it. And those are the parents you need to see. Those are the parents that need to get involved in their kids' education, because we can't do it alone as a teacher. We need you to back us up when the kid gets home and say, well, you know, don't go out hanging around outside. Stay inside and do your homework.
Mm-hmm. You know, I teach a parent empowerment program, and one of the largest inner cities here, last year I was teaching there,
mm-hmm.
and adjoining that large inner city are two extremely wealthy communities,
mm-hmm.
and there the children from those two wealthy communities, they were coming to the inner cities to use that library. And I was kind of puzzled. I said, why aren't they using their library in X and X town? And they said, no, because the resources over here are greater. And we just wish that our children would realize it and utilize it, because all these rich folks' kids are coming over here and taking advantage of it, and our kids are hanging out on the street side, and it's a shame. So again, I think parents need to be watchdogs. But you know, the other thing that's getting in the way of that
mm-hmm.
is that parents are working so many jobs
mm-hmm.
to keep food and to keep shelter. And it comes a time when we have to ask the question, what's more important, the stuff or the future of the child?
Mm-hmm.
Because when we get to realize that the future is more important than the stuff, then we would give up one of those jobs so that we can be there to see what's happening in little Johnny and little Susie's life.
Mm-hmm. And that's not even considering the single parent homes, that there isn't that other parent, and now mm-hmm. now that one parent has to work two jobs. They're
never home.
That there's such a crisis that's going on, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, the haves and the have-nots. We always know which side is the one to get the worst part of the
mm-hmm.
deal, and
mm-hmm.
that's one thing that I put into the book, because as I mm-hmm. traveled between different districts working, and the reason why I did that to begin with, I started off in a very wealthy district, and
mm-hmm.
the students there, 90-some-odd percent of them went to college. It was the high 90% that they went to college. But those
mm-hmm.
kids who didn't go to college, the ones that were falling into the cracks, you couldn't
mm-hmm.
get to them to help them, because
mm-hmm.
the kids who were going to college would monopolize your time to get an
mm-hmm.
answer, because they wanted to keep that A-plus average. So that
mm-hmm.
that kind of like discouraged me in my
mm-hmm.
first job and started me
wow.
on the path of working in alternative schools, because
wow.
now I could concentrate on those students who really needed that help.
Wow.
And
wow.
small class sizes, a few students mm-hmm. only per teacher, but the money was the issue there. As those schools started to get larger, they had to get cut out of the budgets because they were taking too much money. So it's always those who need
the
most help aren't getting what they need.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
back to the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the almighty dollar. Listen, our time is winding down. We have 30 minutes and 41 seconds remaining. Call in 646-915-8166. My honored guest is John Gomes, who is a veteran teacher here in Connecticut. Let's talk about the book, the infamous book. Let's talk about the book and some of its content.
Well, I put together what I think is a good set of observations of what's gone on for the past 18 to 20 years of my career, seeing what's gone on from one of those wealthy districts to the next district I worked with in an alternative school was a farm-based district in Connecticut. And then I went and worked in an inner city for a few years, and then I went back to my old school. And traveling from district to district to see how at the first step in the wealthy district, you'd open a cabinet in a science room and things would fall out. There'd be so much equipment that you could use. Going to the next district, there was a similar amount, but there was one room that all three teachers shared that equipment in. So you could see how the amount of materials and the money had dropped off a bit. When I got to the big city school, there were no cabinets. There was nothing to find in the room. You had to do the best you can with getting to the dollar store and finding things that we used to call it cookbook science. It was basically like doing cooking in your kitchen, you know, finding things to do that were relevant to your curriculum, but you had to do it on a shoestring budget. And I found the same thing back in my school, even though my school that I attended as a child should have had a little bit better as far as monetary help. I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, about how this crisis of students not performing, it's being mislabeled. It's being misunderstood. It's not because of something that our schools aren't doing. It's because of something that some of our students and some of our parents aren't doing. They're not taking the personal responsibility for their actions and for their education. And that to me is, that in a nutshell to me in the book is the main thing I'm trying to get across. Look, you can say whatever you want as far as what you perceive to be the problem in education, but unless you're in the trenches, unless you're in the classroom on a daily basis and you see with your own two eyes, you have no clue. You really have clue as to what's going on. And that's why I invite people. I'm one of those teachers that if somebody were to come to the door and the principal were to come around and showing somebody, I walk right up to them, hi, how are you? And I start talking to them and I start, basically even involving them in the class. Some teachers are paranoid about that. Those are the ones that have they have that adversarial nature. And to me, that's just such a horrible thing in a school to have an adversarial nature between a teacher and administrators or a superintendent and the administrators and the teachers. It breeds something that education isn't about. That's not what education is about. You're supposed to be working cooperatively to help your kids. Do the best they can. What kind of lesson are we teaching students when they hear out of the teacher's mouth about negative things going on in the school? That's doing more harm than you could possibly imagine, because now you've taken that kid's belief in their school and you've just thrown it into the mud and dragged it around.
That's right.
That's the big shame when you see that kind of thing. And I'd rather be positive and fail or have a fault for being positive than to go around being negative and almost destroying a kid's belief in their school.
Do you think all of this is too far gone for a turnaround?
No. I like everything else in our country, we seem to always get to the work when something is broken completely. When things are falling apart, like I always equate our schools to our infrastructure, our bridges in our country. Our bridges are falling apart. They've been falling apart for decades. We don't worry about them until they fall down. That's when we do something.
A car collapse.
Right. That's when the problem suddenly becomes an issue. And now we're in the same role with education. We're waiting for the schools to collapse. Now, they will literally collapse, some of them, because some of them are so run down they're not getting any repairs, that they will fall down. But those won't be the ones in the wealthy communities. Those will be the one in the inner cities, and those will be behind, you know, the curtains that people don't want to look behind, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But all we have to do to start fixing this problem is to stop lying to ourselves. Because that's the biggest issue here. People are lying to themselves, thinking that the school is out to get their kid because the teacher is calling and saying that your child's misbehaving or your child's doing this. I'll never forget the story I heard. Ron Clark, one of the most successful educators down in the Atlanta area, started his own school, and he did what I'm trying to do to the, you know, 100th power. And he went out and he said, I'm going to make a school to help the kids. And, boy, he's just done a great job promoting education. But I heard him relate a story once that a teacher told him that Johnny was misbehaving and did this in class. And the teacher told him. And so Ron Clark waited outside at the car pickup that day and said to the parent when they came up to say, hey, I heard that Johnny, you know, was misbehaving and he did this and did that. And the first words out of the parent's mouth were, who else saw that? Instead of taking the responsibility from the principal coming out of his mouth, there was a question right away. And it's like, look, remember our big self-esteem phase that we went through about maybe 20 years ago, we started that. No one wanted to say anything negative to a child because it might hurt their self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? You need to be told when you're doing something wrong in life.
That's right.
You can't learn unless you learn from your mistakes.
That's right. You have to take responsibility. Or else, if you don't correct it when they are young, they're going to be turning adults. And what happened? This is going to be going all around again because they're not going to be able to correct and hold their children responsible to. So,
the parents who don't do this, they might think that this isn't affecting them, but I guarantee you that the parents who are lying to themselves that their kids don't do these things in school, they're getting it much worse at home when that student becomes a teenager. And now they're going through adolescence, which is already hell for all of us to go adolescence. You're starting to change, your body's changing, your mind's changing, and now you have no self-control. That's really the thing that I say sometimes. I'm kind of happy being single and I don't have kids. I come home and it's quiet.
Wow. You don't know what you're missing. Do you think if there could be more one-on-one conversation with district heads, superintendents, and classroom teachers? Because from what I know, there is not that kind of a conversation going on. I think there is a conversation with the principal, and then whatever gets to the superintendent is what the principal want to get. But do you think if something is implemented where there could be more one-on-one conversation with superintendents and classroom teachers, we would kind of put a little dent in what's going on?
Oh, definitely. There's that adversarial nature that, you know, districts have with the administrators, the superintendents. You don't see superintendents in schools. They stay in their district offices and delegate what they perceive to be a problem and what they perceive to be the answer to that problem. And in reality, nowadays, it's completely off from what actually is happening. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, about why don't people say these things out loud? Well, a teacher has tenure, which is a big issue with a lot of people today, because they perceive the teachers that are such horrible teachers not being able to be fired, when in reality, you know, a teacher who really does something wrong, they're going to be fired. There are safeguards within education and evaluation of teachers. But the thing that I've always seen over the past 20 years is that what comes out of my mouth and then gets to the principal, like you said, and then it gets from the principal to the administrator, by the time it goes, remember that game we used to play as kids, telephone, and you'd say something, and it'd get to the end, it would be totally different. That's what seems to happen when administrators say something, and they're the ones to say something on the news and in the paper and what's going on.
That's
well,
right.
Guess what? Some of them have never even been in a classroom to teach, number one.
That's
and
right.
If they did, it was probably decades ago before these problems started, really. They have no idea. And they're actually, that politician part is what's coming out to me. They're putting the best spin on the information to make the district look good, when in reality,
right.
You need to tell the parents what's going on. This is what's happening. We need you to come in and get more involved in your child's education, especially those of you who have kids who are suffering right now, and we have to work on these rather than these scapegoats or these patches that are coming out now, which that's where that standardized testing comes back in. The standardized testing is falsely giving information to parents, I believe. I've always said, as a science teacher, if you gave the standardized testing results that these schools are disseminating to the public and telling what's going on, and you gave those same ideas to a scientist and asked them to look at the data and say, what do you think of this result? They'd throw it in the garbage, Daphne. They wouldn't even consider it as a relevantly tested object, because if you want to see how a kid is doing on a test, in our day, when they wanted to see how a teacher was performing, all they had to do is come in and look at the test scores, right? And if Johnny is getting a 40, well, Johnny's not doing too well. Well, what's the problem? Well, Johnny doesn't study, doesn't motivate himself. Okay, fine. Now, they give a standardized test to a student that counts for nothing, basically. They have no connection to the class. It's not for a grade. Now they take that test, which, if you're familiar with standardized testing, it takes a week to a week and a half. You have kids testing on material that they should know over the course of the last few years. Well, the good students are going to do well on those tests. They're going to give you back some good data. The students that don't do well in school, they don't even care, some of them. I mean, the strangest thing about these is, on the back of some of these standardized tests, teachers are instructed to fill out a specific box if the kid decided not to do it.
Wow.
Now, how are you supposed to get a relevant amount of data from a test when somebody doesn't care and isn't putting forth a good effort? Well, that's like a scientist doing a drug test and saying, basically, here, you guys do whatever you want with these drugs, and when you're done, we'll look at you and see how you're doing.
Let me know. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So that has to go away to me. If you're asking me what's something that's going to help us and going to help administrators and teachers, that standardized testing idea has to get out of the picture, because it's not helping at all. It's hurting. It's showing parents something that isn't real, that's something that isn't valid. That's the problem.
So who needs to start this conversation, and where does the conversation get started?
Well, if you're going to start this conversation, the best place I think to start it is a PTA meeting, because PTA meetings are there for a specific reason. You're supposed to be talking about what's going on in the school with teachers and parents, and I don't know if they're really being utilized the right way nowadays. I think they're being used the way they used to be in the old days, when schools were running well and everything was going great. Well, your PTA meetings revolved around the, you know, what processes were happening or what events were going on. We need real real conversation as to mm-hmm. what's going on in the school, in those meetings, and real blunt talk. The sugarcoating to me is the thing that's hurting. And in my book, I say right in the introduction, I'm sorry, but I've always been somewhat of a sarcastic person. So you're going to find a lot of sarcasm in that book because I believe in blunt talk. Don't tell me, you know, a tap dance around an issue. Tell me what's going
right.
on. That's where
right.
we have
well,
to start it.
Based on that, then, I think your goal then is to focus on getting your book in the hands of all the PTOs in this country.
Well, that would be
because
nice.
Somebody needs to know what's going on out there, and somebody needs to start the conversation. You know, they always say, where does the time go when you're mm-hmm. having fun? We are down to 14 minutes. I want you to just summarize our conversation today. Pick out a few high points that you want to leave our listeners with, and tell them again the name of your book and where to pick it up.
Okay, well, it's What Have You Done to Our Schools? It's an e-book on Amazon.com at the bargain basement price of $2.99 for a copy. So I'm not doing this, obviously, to get rich. I'm trying to get something going as far as a conversation, a real conversation of what's happening in schools. And I'll tell you from my limited experience of this, Daphne, over the past, 6 months now since it's been out, I haven't been able to get a lot of people to talk to me about it as far as news people and information out there, and I'm starting to wonder if it's one of these topics that people just don't want to talk about and they don't want to, acknowledge.
On a serious note, John, I think you need to find a way to get it, if it's even to each president's of each PTO and PTAs. You got to find a way to do that.
It's a new experience for me, I'll tell you that, and it's been interesting, but I did it for the reason of trying to just, like I said, not give you all the answers. I'm not the answer man here. I'm not going to sit and say that after teaching 20 years, I know, what's going on. But these are my concrete observations as a science teacher as to what I've seen. You can, use your own judgment as if you read the book and say, what you believe or not. But this is what I've seen with my own two eyes, and I know it's not working, and I know it's not the way it used to be when we were students.
And what's going to be happening, too, once these parents start reading it, they're going to be saying, hold on here. That is accurate. So it's kind of affirming what they have been thinking all along and what their observations have been, too. But here is something now that affirms it and kind of give them the encouragement to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And like your show is all about, I'm trying to empower people to do the right thing for their children and for themselves and to stop pretending that it's somebody else's fault. There's too much blame throwing in education
right.
nowadays.
And
you,
not enough responsibility. That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. 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 So, we have 11 minutes and 42 seconds remaining. Any other high points you want to leave with the listeners?
Well, I'm currently trying to just market the book and get conversations like you've been gracious enough to have with me tonight. And if you think everything is okay with your child and your child's education and their development, then you're not really the person I'm focusing at. And that's unfortunately the problem we have nowadays, that, too, a lot of parents are into their students' education, and that kid is fine. That kid is getting what they need at home. They're getting the encouragement. They're getting the right positive attitude towards school. It's the parents who aren't listening to you right now. It's the parents mm-hmm. who don't read things about what's going on. They just rely upon what they hear from other people. You know, you can't go through your life with that kind of behavior. You have to start educating yourself. You teach students for a period of time and then they move on. Your education lasts for the rest of your life.
That's
right. It doesn't matter how old you are. You're always learning. Mm-hmm. And you should be always learning.
Life is a classroom. It never ends. Every day you get up, you are in school. You don't have to go to a formal classroom because life itself, you step through that front door and you are in school. So long as you take the time to learn those lessons, there are valuable lessons there to learn. Well, I pray that, you know, this conversation, I know, is not only an American conversation, because I'm sure that other listeners across the world are going to be able to find value in this conversation. But my prayer today is that the parents whose kids are really getting the best out of the system, I challenge them to take a family whose child is not doing so well and help them to turn that around.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid to have this needed conversation, because before long we are going to be sorry that we did not say something. It is my responsibility. It's John's responsibility. It's your responsibility. It's nobody's fault, but it is each of our responsibility. So why don't we just step up and take responsibility and make the difference in what we can do?
It takes a village, right?
That's right.
To raise a kid.
Mm-hmm. I'm such a believer in that. It takes a village. I remember growing up as a child in Jamaica, and if I did something that wasn't right, I didn't have to wait to get home to be disciplined, because whichever adult saw me, I would be disciplined, and then when they see my mom and told her, I would get something else again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need to have that system again in place. Again, it's like everybody, oh, you're not my child. Yes, because we are all community's children. And if we had each adult looking out for each child, a lot of the struggles and challenges our kids go through, we would not have to go through them. You know?
That's true.
So we have 7 minutes remaining. Is there something you're thinking that, oh, I should have mentioned this and I didn't get an opportunity to?
Right now, no. But you know what? 8 minutes from now, I'm probably going to come up with something. But
I guess you're going to have to talk about it to yourself, because we are going to be long gone.
And I'll send you an email, I guess. But no, you know, I like you said, you know, growing up in Jamaica, when I was growing up, I went to a parochial school. So, you know, from that, you're not going to get away with a lot in a parochial school. And
there
are people there to help you not only educationally, but spiritually. And if you don't take that help, then you're going to get that call home, like you were saying, too.
That's right.
Those are starting to disappear as well because of money problems, and they're closing and consolidating. So there's so many aspects of education that are changing and not for the better. And we got to get back to, like you said, what's important here? Your education is the most important part of your life. And
that's
if you don't set yourself up the right way from the beginning, woe is you when you get farther down. I told some of my students that don't even want to try. I said, what are you going to do when your boss gives you an assignment and you turn it in and it's the same quality as the work that you just gave me? Oh, I won't do that then. Well, don't tell me you won't do that then, because if you did that now, how are you going to have the tools to do it the right way then?
You don't know. You don't know anything else. What you're doing now is what you know. It's what has become part of you. It's your habit. It's your practice.
Right.
So
you
have
can't practice.
To. That's right. So again, tell people the name of the book, and I want to thank you for this conversation. I honor you for what you're doing, and I pray that one of these days we will be on here speaking on a more positive note, that some of the things that you observed that needed changing has been changed, and that will be a glorious day.
I would say so. I'm not going to hold my breath until that happens, Daphne, but we have to try, right?
Come on. We have to put some energy in it and just, you know, we get what we ask for. So
mm-hmm. You get what you pay for in life, right?
Oh, yes.
So on that note, the book is What Have You Done to Our Schools on Amazon.com. And granted, you're not gonna pay a lot for it, but I hope you get something out of it. From what I put into it.
Right, and maybe what you need to do is to get as many emails as you can of PTO and PTA members and just invest in them and send them a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And hope that they will then buy it for the members after that.
Okay.
All right, we never know how our investment. Well, I tell you, I enjoyed this conversation. I pray it was half the fun it was for you as it is for me, and continue doing that which you were called to be. Don't allow anyone or anything to dim the flame that is so bright in our community. Sometimes it looks as if you are not making a dent, but be encouraged. Know that what you're doing is important, and you will see the result that you seek to find. I honor you, and I encourage you to keep doing this great work.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. I encourage you guys to check in with us again on Wednesday. See you on Wednesday at 10 a.m. when we are going to be empowering and inspiring entrepreneurs and small business people. For our guests, 3920-3899-3871. Thank you guys for joining in the chat. And also guests 3367. And for my caller from California, she's always a great supporter of this show. I honor each and every one of you. And you know what else? I love you all, and ain't nothing you guys can do about that. So stay true to your destiny. Know that you were created to do magnificent, magnificent job in this world. I'll see you again on Wednesday. Good night.
My destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord, thank you.